Hello, my name is Chrissy Champagne, and you are listening to Residue, a true crime podcast dedicated to keeping you paranoid. Today, I have a case to tell you about that's going to anger you. It's going to make you say out loud, no, this did not happen. They are not doing that. No, they are not. But yes, they did. You might see this case called the McDonald's prank case, the fast food hoax case, but this was anything but a prank or a hoax. This was pure terror, and this was a pure nightmare for Louise Oghorn. This past week, I rewatched a movie that I saw, I believe back in maybe 2014. I rented this movie from the library, which I used to always do. I would find these great independent films, and this one was called Compliance. And now I rewatched this last week and didn't realize for some reason back then that this was based on a true story. So of course I'm like, got my mind spinning. I'm like, I have to tell this story on my podcast because this is one of the most fucked up stories I've ever heard. And I think the name Compliance for the movie is just such a great title because everyone complies in a different way. You 100% should check out the movie Compliance when you're done listening to this. It's directed by Craig Zobel. He does a fantastic job. I mean, there are scenes in it that are just going to induce your anxiety and get you really scared, nervous, everything. And Ann Dowd does a fantastic job playing the manager of the restaurant. Okay, enough about the movie. Let's get into the actual story about what happened to Louise Oghorn. It was April 9th, 2004, and we are in Mount Washington, Kentucky, at a McDonald's restaurant that Louise Oghorn works at. She's an 18-year-old. She is, by all accounts, a great student, a great friend, a worker they can count on. She's helping her mother with the bills because her mother is sick. So along with trying to finish her senior year of high school and also get into college next year, she's working part-time at McDonald's. And she had already worked that day, but the manager was a little concerned because someone else called out that night and they needed some extra help because a secret shopper was going to be coming through the restaurant that night. And the manager was like, can you please help and stay with us, Louise? I'll pay for your dinner. So Louise sits down, she has some dinner, and then she hops back on her shift. She gets behind the register and she starts her night. The manager on that night was named Donna Summers, and Donna receives a phone call in the back office. The man on the other end of the line describes himself as a police officer. He says his name is Officer Scott. Now, Officer Scott starts giving Donna a very vague description of somebody that works for her. So he's just kind of like, there's a young girl, she's got brunette hair, she's at the register, and Donna is the one that offers up the name, oh, you mean Louise? Yes, I mean Louise, says Officer Scott. Now, he tells her that she's going to have to go out front, get Louise, and bring her to the back office because there has been a situation, and the situation involves a customer calling the police and telling them that Louise stole money from her while she was there eating earlier in the day. Now, according to Officer Scott, the police are just way too buried right now to be able to deal with this. But they're going to need Donna to keep Louise detained in the back office until they can send an officer out there to figure out what the situation is. So even though it's slammed busy up front, Donna goes out, she brings Louise back in, and Donna is this type of manager or type of personality that you can tell she loves to be in charge. It's almost like you probably know this type of person or you've worked for them before. You've had a manager or a coworker who takes the tiniest bit of authority and they run with it. And that's kind of like what Donna's like in this situation. just says, you know, empty your pockets, let me look through your purse, and they find nothing. Officer Scott tells her that she needs to take away Louise's cell phone and she needs to take away her car keys. Louise is already crying. Kim Dockery, the assistant manager, actually said that Louise was bawling her eyes out and just begging to at least go to a police station. She's like, what are you doing to me? If they really think I did something, then I would rather just go down to the police station. So the officer tells Donna that she's going to have to strip search Louise. And Donna agrees. But she says, you know what? I think corporate would want me to have another female in the room while I do this. So she goes out, she gets Kim Dockery, the assistant manager, and she brings her into the room so that she can be a witness as Donna strip searches her employee. Donna makes Louise take off all of her clothes, everything, socks, underwear, bra. She puts all of the clothes in a plastic bag, and at one point, Kim, the assistant manager, actually just reaches over and grabs Louise an apron, like a dirty old McDonald's apron that barely even fit Louise. Kim Dockery stays in the office with Donna and Louise for about an hour, and she's like, you know what, Donna, I gotta get back out there. I have to help. So I know when you hear the story, you're kind of like, why would anybody let this happen? But you have to remember, they're all working at their very fast-paced job at, you know, minimum wage at a McDonald's, and they don't really understand what's happening. All they know is they just have to get back out to work. They have to keep things flowing smoothly. The customers are getting angry. The lines are getting longer. So since Kim has gone, Donna is told by the officer that she's going to have to bring someone else in there to watch over Louise while Donna now has to go back out and start helping out in the restaurant. So Donna goes back out and she brings in 27-year-old Jason Bradley. So she brings in a male coworker of Louise's. He's one of the cooks at the restaurant, and he's pretty tight with Louise. They're kind of buddies. And as he walks back there and sees her just sitting there in this apron, he's like, what the fuck is happening? Like, what is going on? And Donna just says, here are the officers on the phone. Take the phone, talk to Officer Scott, and he will explain everything to you. And now, of course, Officer Scott tells Jason Bradley that he's going to need him to remove Louise's apron and also describe her body to him. And Jason freaks out. He's like, no way, no way I am going to do this. So Jason leaves the office and he just continues on with his shift. Now, Louise would state later in an interview, Jason didn't do anything to hurt me, but he also didn't do anything to help me. So, restaurant's getting packed. It's a Friday night. Place is pumping. So Donna's like, I gotta go out there. And the officer's like, okay, well, if Jason won't do it, do you know anybody else that could do it? Do you know anybody else that could watch your employee? And she says, I don't really know. There's nobody here. And the officer is like, are you married? And Donna says, and this is stated and quoted by Louise, Donna giggles a little bit on the phone, like all happily, like, I'm engaged. And the officer's like, well, you could ask your fiance to come into the restaurant and sit with Louise for a little bit, because that's completely normal. It's also like, so your fiance can get here in enough time, even though he lives farther away than the police station actually is, because heads up, the police station is about a quarter of a mile from this McDonald's restaurant. So hours have gone by at this point and no officers in sight, but still a naked and scared Louise just sitting in this back office. And we have to remember that Louise is only 18 years old. She's still a senior in high school. And I know technically 18, you can be considered an adult at this point, but why didn't you call her parents? Why not call her parents and say, you know what, there's this weird situation and I'm gonna need you to come down to the McDonald's and get your daughter. But of course, that is not what Donna does. Donna calls her 43-year-old exterminator fiancé, and his name was Walter Nix Jr. He was a father of two. He comes in to McDonald's, and she gives him the rundown on what is happening. I will give you a trigger warning here for sexual assault, because for the next 2 hours on the surveillance cameras, you can see Walter Nix obeying every single instruction that Officer Scott gave him. Walter is told to remove the apron that Louise is wearing, and he is told to order her to dance and perform jumping jacks while she's naked. The officer says that she could be hiding money inside of her body, so if she does jumping jacks in front of Walter, maybe some of the stolen goods will fall out. Walter is told to order Louise to sit on his lap and kiss him, and Louise is just refusing to do this. And the officer tells him that she must be punished for refusing to do what you tell her because you're her boss right now. He tells Walter that Louise must call him sir from now on, and since she was not complying to any of this, he said that Louise was to lay over Walter's lap naked so that Walter could spank her. Now, on the surveillance tapes, you can see Walter really hurting Louise. He's not just lightly spanking her, he is hurting her. You can see visible welts and marks even on the surveillance camera, and he does this for over 10 minutes. Now, this entire time, Donna is coming back and forth from the front to the back office now, and every time she comes in, you can see Walter throw the apron back at Louise, like put the apron on. Louise can be seen begging Donna to help her, to stay with her. There's even a part of the video where Donna walks in and Louise is purely naked. There's no apron. And you can see Louise put her head on Donna, crying, begging for help, and Donna leaves again. So it's now been over 2.5 hours and Louise is still in the office. In the office with Walter, and she is now ordered to perform oral sex on Walter. After this happens, Donna returns to the room, and Walter says he has to go. He has to leave. It was told later in court that after he did leave, he called a friend, and all he said to this friend was, "I have done something terribly bad." Now, Walter just left the restaurant in a rush, and you're probably already thinking to yourself, when is enough going to be enough for Donna? When is she going to say, you know what? What the fuck is happening? No. Well, Donna's still told to get someone else to come into the office and watch Louise. So Donna asks a maintenance man who works for the restaurant. He had come in to get some dessert. It was the dinner time rush, and he was just kind of stopping in to see what's up, see if they need anything. His name was Thomas Sims. And when Donna tells him to go into the back office, we want to thank the Lord for Thomas Sims, because Thomas says, "What is going on in here?" And he's given the phone, and Officer Scott is like, same story over again, now telling Thomas he's going to have to take off Louise's apron and describe her body. And Thomas is like, "No, what the hell, Donna, are you doing?" This is when Donna's like, "Oh my God, we have to call the cops." Donna actually calls her supervisor first. Well, that sentence would have sounded better if it was in the beginning of this story and I said Donna called her supervisor first, and then none of this would have happened, but that's not where we're at. So Donna calls her supervisor, Lisa, and Lisa's like, "What are you talking about? I've been sleeping all day." Then they call the cops. And let me tell you, those cops come quick. Like, they get there real quick. Even in the movie Compliance, there's a spectacular scene where they just really show you exactly how long it took for that cop to leave his office and get to the McDonald's. It definitely wasn't half a day. So the police arrive to the McDonald's, and one thing that Jason did after they got there was he pressed star 69, and that gave the police officers a phone number as to the last phone number that called the restaurant. Do you guys remember star 69? Obviously I do because I'm super old, I'm Gen X, but star 69 is when you can press star 69 and it will tell you the last phone number that you were just talking to or the last phone number that called your phone. The police officers call this phone number back and they find out that this phone number is connected to a payphone at a grocery store in Panama City, Florida. Whoever used this phone to call McDonald's, they used a calling card. So the detectives call the Panama City police to get help. And at this point, they tell the police officers, hey, we're already working on a similar case. Almost the same exact thing happened to someone here in Florida, but the call came from Massachusetts. So they find out that the calling card was purchased from a Walmart. They find the time and the date. So they go to the Walmart and they watch the surveillance videos. On the videos, they discover a white male wearing a uniform. And on that uniform reads, Corrections Corporation of America. This was a local private prison. So they go to that prison, they show the warden of the prison the video, and the warden identifies 38-year-old David Stewart. Identifying David Stewart in the Walmart on camera helped the officers in Kentucky with their case, but unfortunately, in Massachusetts, where the calling card was bought, they had no surveillance cameras. So the case had to be taken to Kentucky. So now David Stewart is extradited to Kentucky, where he would stand trial for impersonating an officer and solicitation of sodomy. If David Stewart is convicted, he would face 15 years. But David Stewart does not plead guilty. He claims that the calling card wasn't his. He also claims, or his lawyers claim, even if the calling card was his, somebody else could have used it. We have no proof, no evidence that this was actually David Stewart making the calls. All we know is he actually bought the card. David Richard Stewart was a 38-year-old married man and the father of five children. At this point, David is now being held for a series of fraudulent phone calls made to a numerous amount of restaurants and small businesses all across the country. These crimes began in 1994 and continued for a total of 10 years. In these crimes, the caller would ring a grocery store or a restaurant, and he would be claiming to be a police officer. And what he would do is what we just heard, convince the employees to conduct strip searches and get them to perform humiliating acts. It is believed that over 70 phone calls were reported across 30 U.S. states. David has five kids. Like, how does he have any time to be doing any of this? Before we get to the trial and the aftermath, I want to give you a couple examples that I found of some of the many calls that David made. Now, at this point, he's being tried for all of these, but he's saying he did none of them. So on May 29th, 2002, an 18-year-old female McDonald's employee in Iowa, it was her first day at this job, she was forced to strip naked, jog in place, and assume several poses at the direction of the officer on the other line. On January 26th, 2003, an Applebee's assistant manager in Davenport, Iowa, subjected a waitress to a 90-minute strip search after receiving the same collect call from someone who said they were an officer. In July 2003, a Winn-Dixie grocery store manager in Panama City, Florida, received a phone call instructing him to bring a female cashier, who he also just described, and the manager went out and picked one, into an office where she was to be strip searched. The cashier was forced to undress and assume different positions as part of the search. This incident was stopped because another manager entered the room to get some keys. In December of 2003, a call was placed to a Blockbuster video franchise in Bismarck, North Dakota. At this point, the caller claimed to be an officer for the local police and alleged that an employee had committed theft, stating that the employee could be searched by a manager because Blockbuster's privacy policy. A female employee was then taken to the back office, where she was subsequently strip searched by both the manager and a male coworker. On March 22, 2004, a female customer, she was 17, she was a high school student on spring break, just having some lunch with her two friends. She was at a Taco Bell in Fountain Hills, Arizona. She was strip searched by a 39-year-old male manager in the back room at the request of a police officer on the phone. These are just a couple of examples of some of the terror that was just going across the country with these calling card pranks, which I don't even want to call them because they're not pranks. This is just ruining people's lives. This is horrendous. So let's get back to David's trial. When David was questioned by police, he insisted he never bought a phone card, and then detectives searched his home and they found one in his home that had been used to call at least 9 restaurants in that past year, including a call to a Burger King in Idaho Falls, Idaho, on the same day when that restaurant's manager was reportedly duped by a scam. Police also found in Stewart's home dozens of applications for jobs at the police department, hundreds of police magazines and different types of guns, different holsters, police-style uniforms. So this leads the police to suspect that David really fantasized about being a police officer. On October 31st, 2006, David Stewart was acquitted of all charges. Both the defense attorneys and the prosecution, they speculated that a lack of direct evidence, such as any recordings of the calls, any way to hear David's voice on the calls, that might have led the jury to find him guilty. But obviously, reasonable doubt in this case when, you couldn't really prove that it was David doing it. But I will say something. There were never any calls again. And I kind of think that's proof in itself. I don't know. It could be that if somebody different was doing it, this scared them, but I don't know. I feel like the calls just completely stopped after this happened and after this became public and after David was put on trial. Walter Nix pleaded guilty to sexual abuse, sexual misconduct, and unlawful imprisonment. The judge agreed to a plea deal for Walter in exchange for him testifying against David Stewart. And due to the level and length of his involvement in the actual physical crimes against Louise, Walter Nix was sentenced to 5 years in prison. As for Donna Summers, Donna quickly ended her engagement to Walter right after the incident. Of course, she was fired from McDonald's, and that was because she violated corporate policies that prohibit both a strip search and allowing a non-McDonald's employee to enter the restaurant office. So Donna entered an Alford guilty plea, and that was to one single count of unlawful imprisonment as a misdemeanor and was sentenced to 1 year probation. Kim Dockery, the assistant manager, was transferred and started working at another location. Louise underwent intensive therapy and medication to get past her post-traumatic stress disorder and severe depression. She actually abandoned her plans to attend the University of Louisville. And she was intending on becoming a pre-med student, but in an interview with ABC News, she just said that after this whole incident, she felt dirty. And she ended up having a ton of difficulty making friendships, maintaining friendships, because she wouldn't allow anyone to get close to her. She didn't trust anyone anymore. 3 years after this incident, Louise Ogborn went on to sue McDonald's for $200 million for failing to protect her during her ordeal. These were her grounds for the suit. that McDonald's corporate headquarters were aware of the danger of a possible hoax because they had defended themselves already against lawsuits over similar incidents at its restaurants in four other states. So McDonald's already knew that this was a thing going around. Not a word to any of their employees. The second grounds were that McDonald's had been subjected to similar hoaxes at least 2 years before the Mount Washington incident, and they had not taken appropriate action as directed by their own chief of security and as outlined in his memo to McDonald's upper management. Donna Summers also sues McDonald's, and she asked for $50 million, and she asked for that for failing to warn her about the previous hoaxes that were occurring across the country at different McDonald's. The jury decides in Donna's case that Donna and McDonald's were 50% at fault for the abuse that Louise had to endure. And McDonald's and their attorneys agreed to pay Donna $1.1 million. In her lawsuit against McDonald's, Louise Ogborn was rewarded $6.1 million for damages and expenses. After the trial, McDonald's revised its manager training program to put a huge emphasis on awareness of scam phone calls and protecting their employees' rights. Louise Ogborn currently lives with her husband, Jason Bolin, and they have two daughters. They live in Taylorsville, Kentucky. Louise said, "I can't trust anyone. I push people out of my life because I don't want them to know what happened." Louise graduated from high school, but she never did go to the University of Louisville to study pre-med. Louise's therapist stated she was dealing with a lot of issues of shame, feeling contaminated, feeling dirty, and questioning herself. When anything like this happens, it destroys our illusions. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Residue. I hope you'll join me again next week. And if you did enjoy this episode of Residue, please leave a 5-star review on any of your listening platforms. It really helps us to find new listeners just like you. You can also join me on Facebook at Residue, a True Crime Podcast, or on Instagram at Residue Podcast. I also have an email address, residuepodcast@gmail.com. Just jump on those social media sites with me and we can chat. We can talk about new stories you want to hear. But you know what I gotta say? I want you guys to stay safe and stay paranoid.